The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, a weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day.
Well, this is Winfred Vaughan Thomas introducing this week's London Forum. And tonight our subject for discussion is the advantages and the disadvantages of being an expatriate in Britain. And to discuss it, we've got round the table three well-known people who are expatriates. A lady, Susan Ertz, the well-known novelist, and then a broadcaster, Colin Wills, and a professor, Professor Rainier of London University. And, well, I take it you all are expatriates, and you know what an expatriate is.
Surely it means somebody who lives in another country than his own.
I think I'd better settle the question straight away by turning up the dictionary and tell you what that says.
All right.
Here it is. An expatriate. One who has been banished from his country, or who has voluntary withdrawn. But now I think we better have confessions from you all. Which is it to be, banished or voluntary withdrawal, Miss Earth?
Well, I hope it was the second in my case. I can't even say that I withdrew voluntarily. It just seemed to happen that I found myself here. A great deal as a child and a great deal throughout my life. In fact, I've always been going and coming between here and America. I can't think how often I've been across that Atlantic, both by sea and by air. I've quite lost track of it, so that I feel really less than an expatriate than an Anglo-American.
And by birth, you are?
Well, by birth, I'm British, but my parents were American.
Well, that makes it a complete, the perfect expatriate on both sides of the Atlantic. Now, Colin Wills, what about you?
Well, I wasn't exactly banished when it started. I mean, I really did come here of my own free will, but I have the feeling that Australians, once they have made themselves expatriates, are always banished afterwards, because their people always think once you go and live abroad, you can never be a real Australian again. I don't know if that's true.
How long have you been here?
I've been here since just before the war, 11 years.
Now, Professor Rainier, I'm absolutely confident where you come from, it's Holland.
Indeed. I came 36 years ago, and I came on a visit to study. I'm still on a visit, you know, and that's about all.
And your work here?
I teach the young of England Dutch history, and I tell the Dutch about what happens here.
So there you have three expatriates. And now, lady and two gentlemen, do you not feel it's a question of divided loyalties? You are here, and I ought to reveal the fact, as chairman, that I also am an expatriate. I'm a Welshman.
How are you? Well, how very nice to have a foreign country to which you can go by rail so quickly.
If you've got the rail fare.
But I don't feel any divided loyalty, and I wonder whether you do. How about you, Miss Earth?
Well, no, I can't say that I do feel a divided loyalty. I feel a loyalty to both, which is much more comfortable. Luckily, there's never been a serious clash between our countries, between the two countries in my day, and I trust there never will be, so it's very easy to feel that.
Professor Rainier.
Yes, I can't speak of divided loyalties, but joint loyalties. Nowadays, I suppose I would say that I feel 50% British and 50% Dutch. There was a time when I felt more British than I do now. Then came the invasion of Holland, May 1940. That made a difference. It made everything Dutch so real again to me.
And Colin Wells.
Well, what I feel is, carrying it a little further, not divided, but united loyalties. Mm. I honestly think that people like me, with all the disadvantages of being expatriates, have this in their favour, that they can interpret the one to the other to some extent. When I was in Australia, we always thought of Australia as the real place, and England as a very nice theoretical place. But now that I know both, I feel that I've got a certain loyalty to each.
Do you ever feel completely assimilated, though, Colin? I know as a Welshman, well, whenever the English do something wrong, I say to myself, I'm a Welshman, I'm not to blame. When they do something glorious, I say, oh, of course, I'm British.
Well, of course, that's a wicked trick that I have, too. I mean, you and I remember once during the war with an American army, and we used to do that very thing. If the British were in this phase, we'd say, of course, I'm a Welshman or I'm an Australian. If everything was going well, that doesn't matter, the British were all right. You see. However, personally, I feel that this question of assimilation is a very personal one. I feel perfectly content to live as an Englishman. But I never think that the English mess is the normal mess. To me, the normal mess is the Australian mess. And when these English people shut down their windows to go to sleep at night, I say, what an extraordinary thing to do, you know?
In other words, the common man for you is the Australian.
Exactly.
Yes, that's not the case for me. I feel the common man in England is the common man for me and the common man in Holland. It's a different thing. When I'm in Holland, I am the anglicized Dutchman, who sometimes even finds it difficult to find the right word. And when I'm here, I'm the foreigner. May I say that, in my opinion, a very great advantage. I can show you how it works with language. Well, in feeling, perhaps I'm half and half. In language, I suppose 90% English now. I have a foreign accent, not very strong. I write the language fairly decently. I don't want to write it entirely well, because the British would be less tolerant if I were just like themselves.
I think you're very lucky, Professor Renier, to be completely bilingual. It's the thing we would all like to be. Do you think in both languages equally easily?
Oh, yes, and in French as well, which is...
which is the language of my mother.
It depends on circumstances, and sometimes when I have a problem, I translate to myself and think afresh in another language, and then I find the solution.
But you've still not answered the question. Do you feel yourself completely and utterly assimilated? Now, you, Miss Ertz, from the American side, Colin from the Commonwealth, Professor Renier from Europe, do you feel that you can really become British?
I think so. It's a question of feeling, and it's a question of affection, I think. You couldn't possibly be assimilated by a country that you didn't love. It's a question of affection, I think.
And I think it's a question of the warmth and tolerance of the country that you're assimilated by. I think there are some countries which wouldn't assimilate us at all. But honestly, I think that Britain does take one in if one wants to be taken in. Only one always cunningly feels a little secret place in the mind which belongs to the other country and gives you a certain advantage over the native. You can think a different way if you want to.
Well, you've all come to us. I say good morning. That's a medium mistake, as a Welshman will never forgive me. I say, you see, I'm completely
assimilated. But let me tell you that I don't agree there. For me, it's different. I remain different. I'm not assimilated, and I feel that very strongly. I am a foreigner. I love this country. I remain a foreigner, however, and I want to remain a foreigner.
Ah, now, are there any advantages in being an expatriate?
Well, I expect there are, and there are also disadvantages. I think the advantages probably are that you're perhaps more aware than if you were living in your own country, more aware of what's happening around you. And you bring a more critical and possibly even intelligent eye to what's going on, to the things and people you see. I think there are advantages. There are disadvantages too, which we might discuss later, I think.
What about the advantages for you, Colin?
Well, as a matter of fact, Miss Earth has taken the exact word I was going to say. It's largely in that matter of awareness. The Australians, and I suppose all Dominion people, are rather lucky in that they grow up in two worlds. They grow up in an actual physical world which is familiar to them, which is their own, which is not known to the rest of the world. But they also grow up with a sort of nursery book and magazine and newspaper background in which they get to know the British Isles pretty thoroughly. And so when they come here, they've only to go over the ground and touch these objects, and they are things they're familiar with but which come to life. And that does sharpen your awareness of them to an extent I think the ordinary Englishman can't get.
How does that apply to you, Professor?
Well, I like that word awareness immensely. It precisely expresses what I feel. I tell my students sometimes, you were born to the English language, which is perhaps the noblest in the world, and you don't realize what a privilege it is and what an advantage. Oh. I had to acquire that language at the sweat of my brow when I was 20 and older than that. I know what it is worth. I love it. That's awareness. The native has not got awareness. We expatriates have, and not only for language, but for customs and for many other things, for nature. I believe that I love English nature, although it can't be as beautiful as Dutch nature, of course not. But I love it in a way in which an Englishman can't love it.
You're absolutely right. I love Australian nature, which is rather wild and desolate, as Winford, you will know from having seen it. But to me, that's my native land. And yet this other is back behind my native land, is this old England, the inherited thing.
Well, are there any examples of, literary people who found that an advantage? I know when I turn over expatriates' writing, feel like Henry James. I'm going to stick my neck out here, so chop it off.
Yes,
I do find something lacking. I feel that they are writing about a country, and it's not the writing of a country.
Yes, I suppose that's true in a way, and yet he wouldn't have been Henry James, and he wouldn't have written those books if he had not been an American living in another country.
Yes, certainly so.
He brought that sharp, critical, puzzled, curious mind of his to bear on a country that was not his own. And I think that was an enormous advantage. At least all his readers who love him feel that.
Well, I feel that's true also of someone who comes from my part of the world, or not from Australia. That's Catherine Mansfield.
Yes.
She did write like an expatriate. She wrote with all the sorrow which one sometimes feels at being away from the roots. And yet I think she would have written exactly the same way had she always stayed in New Zealand. She was a sort of expatriate in the world.
Yes, I think that's quite true of her.
Yes, expatriation gives you a shock sometimes, intensifies your perceptions. But we ought to remember also that you can get that same thing sometimes without being an expatriate. Henry James has been mentioned. What about his great brother, the philosopher, William James? William James was not an expatriate. He lived in America, but he traveled quite a lot. And he understood the non-American, the foreign world, so well that he wrote that the most beautiful city in the world is Edinburgh. Now, somehow you must feel it's not an obvious beauty. You must feel that. He felt that somehow, although he was not an expatriate, let us expatriates admit that there are just a few other ways to perfection.
I would like to know, because I do agree. Well, what would you call William James and his sort? Cosmopolitan?
Yes,
something better
yes.
than that.
But all
no, cosmopolitan, aren't
they?
I wonder whether all philosophers were. Hegel wasn't a cosmopolitan, no. But,
Well, they move steady.
We are plunging far apart from the expatriate.
We're among
the philosophers, and that way madness lies. What about the disadvantages of being an expatriate?
Well, I can mention one or two. For instance, I find that when I'm in America, I'm always regarded as an English writer. And in England, I'm always regarded as an American writer. In fact, the truth seems to be that no one will claim me.
But there's always Atlantis.
But at least they read you.
Well, I suppose that is something.
Well, if I spoke my whole mind, everybody would expatriate himself at once. So I shall see what our chairman says. I do believe in expatriation, at least for myself.
But, no, honestly, you don't for everybody.
No, of course not. You see, in my case, for the Dutch, I am the boy who went to Great Britain and did fairly well. They're rather pleased with me. And in Britain, I remain the tolerated outsider. I know what outsider means in English, you know. The tolerated outsider to whom they are kind, just as I'm kind to my dog.
Well, in Australia, it's much the same thing. Lots and lots of writers, artists, dancers, singers come over here and do fairly well, or sometimes very well. But whether they are regarded quite as kindly at home as your people are, I don't know.
Do you ever feel a disadvantage in being an expatriate, living in Britain, Colin?
Yes, a very comical one. Because they always type you. They always say to you, if you're talking about, you know, the third line of a verse by Shelley or something like that, they say, I thought you were an Australian. Why aren't you talking about sheep?
I do understand.
Well, I'm in a rather different position because I feel so much both, and it's rather difficult. I don't find that that there are many disadvantages apart from the one I spoke of, except that I do think for a writer it is perhaps, on the whole, a better thing to have roots and to live where your roots are. I think that has been proved over and over again. It's the rare instance, really, of a writer who becomes an expatriate and still does his best work. It is pretty rare.
Yes, you're all three, in fact, people concerned either with writing or speech in a creative way.
In a creative way.
Now, do you find that losing your roots, coming here, because you left your roots behind, is that, or your bulge, should I say, do you find that a disadvantage?
Well, look, may I say something on that? I don't believe that the person who has strong roots does become an expatriate.
Oh.
I really don't.
Maybe.
I think that the person who's writing or art or work in any degree depends on roots, remains by the roots and sticks to them. I think that, for instance, Miss Ertz, you probably have something like the water lily, the roots which float
Now, that may be. That's a charming
you
simile.
You got something there. I think it's the difference between the exile and the expatriate. The exile who keeps longing for his home.
Are you like that?
I long for it sometimes, but it's not the essence of my being. With an exile, the main thing in his life is the longing for the old country.
He wants to go back. Now, I want to visit, but I don't want to go back.
I don't want
to
go back forever.
Here.
No.
Yes. And that is, I suppose... Yes, that's the expectation.
Well, how would you explain the case of somebody like T.S. Eliot?
Or David Lowe?
Well, I think the voluntary expatriate knows what he wants, what he needs. And he gravitates to that place, wherever it may be.
Would you say that's the case of Eliot?
Evidently, I think.
Well, did Eliot come to England or did he come to Europe? That's another point. I came to Europe.
And yourself, Professor René, you've left Europe to come to us.
Yes, very much so. I came very deliberately, as a matter of fact, to England. I can add this. I came here because I heard that you could play here without being looked down or looked disapprovingly at because you played.
Ah.
And I find it's true.
That brings me to a point I'm longing to put to you all three.